The woman in your life will do what she must do to comfort you and calm you down and let you rest now. The woman in your life, she can rest so easily. She knows everything you do because the woman in your life is you.
Good morning. This is Elaine B. Holtz, and you're listening to Women's Spaces. And at the board with me is my friend, my partner, and my co-producer, Ken Norton. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning.
Well, wow, I have a great guest with me this morning. Joining me on the phone from Los Angeles will be Cheryl Dorsey, who is a retired Los Angeles Police Department sergeant, and she has written a book called, it's really amazing, it's called The Creation of a Manifesto, Black and Blue, and it gives us a lot of insight into what is going on in law enforcement today, and also some great suggestions about what are some of the improvements that we can make. And I thought this was a particularly important interview because we are in the throes right now of having a very exciting election, that we're actually going to elect a new sheriff here in Sonoma County. And I want to make another announcement here that on April 3rd, I'm going to have the honor of interviewing each one of them, and that's going to be Ernesto Olivares, who is our city council member. He's running for sheriff. Mark Essex, who works for the Sonoma County Sheriff's Department right now, and then John Mutz, who is a person from, he also worked at the Los Angeles Police Department and is kind of actually gives a new perspective on what policing is all about. So I know this is going to be a very, very informative show. And you know, from the bottom of my heart, I just want to thank everybody for listening. I mean, radio is becoming more and more powerful each and every day. I mean, we learn so many things from the radio, and just listening to these young people talk. I mean, I went to the march downtown here in Santa Rosa, and we had the Press Democrat reported a little over 2,000. I thought there were more like 3,000 in our little courthouse square downtown. And listening to the beautiful, beautiful speeches of these young people was just amazing to me. And one of the things that was happening is people were walking around with the pictures of, and it's just so heartbreaking. I mean, I cannot imagine of what it must feel like to be a mother or a father or an uncle or an aunt or a friend of these young people who were shot. I mean, it just gives me the chills when I think about it. And that young woman, Emma Gonzalez, where she had almost 5 minutes of silence, I sat in front of my television watching, you know, and then I finally closed my eyes, and about into the second minute, I mean, I was just crying. I just thought, oh my God, what it must have felt like in those moments, you know, those moments when here this man or this young person is shooting, and here you are just in your classroom kind of trapped. And I couldn't help but think of people in foreign lands in the Middle East with bombs. I mean, what are we doing in this world? I mean, what is happening? I mean, we need to come together and figure a way to have peace. And one of the things that took place during the whole march and the event in downtown Santa Rosa was there was a group of people holding up these pictures of these young people who were shot in Florida. And I thought it was very touching, but I went even deeper into it, and I found out that from my dear friend Judy Kennedy, I hope you're listening, Judy. I mean, Judy is I don't know what to call her, but she's an artist, and she really believes in murals and counties. I mean, she's just done some great displays here in Sonoma County. Well, her and a gentleman by the name of Tony Spears, S-P-E-I-R-S, an artist living in Grayton, was compelled to do pencil drawings of the students killed on Valentine's Day. Can you believe that? Valentine's Day. In Florida, after viewing their photographs. After seeing a couple of his portraits on Facebook, Judy Kennedy was compelled to make an even larger statement with a mural of the 14 portrait. Tony gave her permission to have the drawings enlarged to a poster size 24 by 36, and the 84 square foot mural will be installed on the southwest corner of College and Cleveland Avenue in Santa Rosa. where nearly 40,000 vehicles will view this mural each day to remind us our children are dying and we have to do something. So go down to College and Cleveland Avenue and you can see the display. I think even today they're working on it. So a shout out to Judy Kennedy for doing this. And, you know, anything Judy does, she always has her heart, soul, and spirit into it. I mean, that's what we need. We need more community involvement, more people finding out within themselves, what can I do to bring attention to this problem? What can I do to help solve it, for heaven's sake? I mean, I hope in listening to Cheryl Dorsey that we'll have some ideas on more appropriate policing. I mean, let's face it, folks. We're all a family of humanity. If we don't come together on this planet and learn how to live together, let me tell you something, it's gonna dissipate. I mean, we're just in the middle of the universe. I mean, if you look through the Hubble telescope, they can't even see us. So we have to start thinking, who are we and what do we want in our world? And I'll tell you something, I want an end to this violence. I want an end. And you have young people coming out. We have adults in Washington, D.C., I hope. And I'd like to see some good, strong legislation come out so we can protect our young people. I mean, I never had to worry about anything when I went to school. Although I do remember in the 40s when I went to kindergarten, we were doing drop because we were so afraid of nuclear warfare. And here we are. I'm 78, and now we're closer to it than ever. So we got to start thinking about things. Well, another thing that I did that was really interesting, I went to an event at the Luther Burbank Center, and I want to do a shout-out, whoever changed the name back to Luther Burbank Center, I just love it. It's called Women in Conversation. It was presented by the Press Democrat and also Summit State Bank. It was an excellent, excellent program. They had Lindsay Mayer there. They had Ashley Judd, and they had a woman by the name of Adama Ayew, who, I'll tell you something, all three of them, the honesty and the openness that came across on that presentation was just amazing. But you know something? I have a complaint. And I am going to be writing a letter, and it's very, here, let me give you my complaint. And if folks agree or disagree with me, I'd like you to email me at womenspaces.com. That's www.womenspaces.com. That's my email. Oh, excuse me. That's my website. My email is elaine@womenspaces.com. If you agree or disagree, I'd like to hear from you. Well, what my complaint is that here it was, National Women's History Month. Born right here in Sonoma County, California. Actually, it's housed in Santa Rosa, California. It was brought together by a woman by the name of Molly McGregor and her team. It was just an amazing event that happened in 1980. In fact, they're just about ready to celebrate 40 years from this happening. And there was no mention of it. Absolutely no mention of it. That this was Women's History Month. And I was shocked. But what was even more shocking was after the program, I walked up to some of the facilitators and I asked them, do you know that the Women's History Month was born here in Sonoma County? Okay, one out of three didn't know. Two out of three didn't know. But all three of the women presenting this program had no idea that it was International Women's History Month, that it was born here in Sonoma County. It was shocking to me. So I really need to remind people that this is National Women's History Month. And the mission of the National Women's History Project is to recognize and celebrate the diverse and historic accomplishments of women by providing informational services and educational promotional materials. The theme for this year's celebration is Nevertheless, She Persisted, honoring the women who fight all against discrimination against women. It's a very important event, and we celebrate it all month. and was born in our community, and our community is not aware of it. So I hope this makes us all aware. And a special shout out to one of its co-founders, Molly Murphy McGregor, who while we were having this event was in Washington, D.C., receiving an award for 40 years. Amazing. And also honoring many of the honorees that they have selected this year. And what I decided to do every show is to pick one of the women that's being honored. And one of the women that's being honored is Geraldine Ferrero. She was born in 1935, and she made her transition in 2011. Geraldine Ferrero was the first female presidential candidate representing a major political party. So you had Hillary Clinton being the first woman representing a major political party running for president, but Geraldine Ferrero, and I remember this very clearly, was running for vice president. And, you know, it was really interesting about her. She first ran for public office in 1978 and was elected to the U.S. House of Representatives, where she served three terms representing the 9th District of New York. Ferrero quickly rose in her party's hierarchy, where she was twice elected Secretary of the House Democratic Caucus. In Congress, she focused much of her energy on gender equality in wages, pensions, and retirement benefits. She had quite a history. So if you go on www.nwhp.org, you can see a listing of all the people who are honored this year, all the women that who are honored, and you can see the full history of Geraldine Ferrero. You know, and she was a real fighter. She fought sexism on the campaign, and she really, really was an honor to hear her and to see her running for vice president. And at the time, it was like, wow, a woman's running for vice president. I mean, it was such a big deal. So I'm sorry that condolences to her family, but she really made her mark. Another exceptional woman. Well, special reminder right now, I'm going to take a little sip of water here. A special reminder right now is that on Thursday, that's this Thursday, there's going to be a special movie being showed at the Rialto Theater in Sebastopol. It's called The Rape of Racy Taylor. Very interesting film about this young woman who in the Deep South was raped and bring the people who harmed her to, you know, to some sort of legal some sort of consequences for what their action was, and nothing happened. And there was a documentary made that kind of was flipped under the rug until our dear Oprah Winfrey mentioned it. And once Oprah mentioned it, man, all of a sudden it's showing all over the United States. But we are very blessed at the Rialto Theater. They are generously doing a fundraiser for our group called Verity, which is the once at one time was called the Rape Crisis Center, but is now is part of the Family Justice Center, who handles women who have had issues like this, and it's there. It's a fundraiser for them. We're going to have a panel of, I believe, four people. I will be on there representing the National Organization of Women, talking about rape kits and some of the legislation that has been passed. We're going to have my mind went blank. We're going to have the CEO from Verity on, which will be an amazing. She's a great speaker. I saw her actually at the women's gathering at the speakers event, and she'll be there. Also, this is amazing, but our sheriff, Rob Garadano, is also going to be on the panel, which I think is very, very exciting and very brave of him. But as we know of Sheriff Garadano, he's an exceptional man. And also on the panel is going to be our own Jill Ravage, our district attorney, who's going to talk about some of the programs that are available and some of the struggles that she had in getting some of these programs off the ground. It's a good story. You know, we have all kinds of different ideas about our elected officials, but I think when you come out on Thursday at the Rialto Theater. It starts at 6 o'clock. The film will go on at 7. Like I said, it's a fundraiser for Verity. You'll see some of the wonderful things that are happening in our community. I mean, it's just amazing. So that's going to be The Rape of Racy Taylor at the Rialto. And a special shout-out to all the sponsors. We have John Mutz, who's running for sheriff. He's one of the sponsors. We have National Organizations, one of the sponsors, Women's Spaces, and also Emerge Radio. And if you just come on down, it's going to be a wonderful event that's going to be this Thursday, March 29th, at the Rialto Theater in Sebastopol, starting at 6 o'clock. Wow, lots of stuff going on. You know, it's kind of exciting. I'm so happy that people are waking up. I mean, all this marching and people letting you know what they're thinking and feeling is very, very exciting, particularly women. I mean, we're on the move, and I'll tell you, those kids, they inspired me yesterday. They inspired me. It's their future, and as adults, we need to support them. I got to just make one comment. I can't believe it that I read. I can't remember where the article was, but I read something to that they were insinuating that these kids, they're tending to be liberals. Well, folks, I want to ask you a question. I want to give you a description. A human being who believes in peace, who believes in justice, who believes in equality in the workplace, who believes in health care for all, who believes in free education for our children, who believes everybody should have a home and shelter. That's who you call a liberal? You know what I call that person? I call that person a humanist, a person who cares about the human condition. Get rid of those labels, liberal, progressive. You mean I'm progressive because I feel that I believe that we should all have health care? I don't want to be called a progressive. I want to be called a person who cares about people, who wants to make sure that children are safe. So start looking at these ridiculous labels we put on people. We are human beings. You know, I think when someone asks me, who are you? I say, I'm a human being first. I'm a woman second. I'm a mother, a grandmother, and to be a great-grandmother, and the rest of it you can just put on whatever you want. I mean, you can say I'm a radio personality, I write an article, you know, I'm overweight. I don't know. But the idea of progressive, liberal, and all that stuff is ridiculous. So let's start thinking a little bit more about what our labels are. Well, this is the last Monday of the month. Please, wear. Did March go? I know one thing. I had my birthday, and I want to thank everybody again for all the wonderful birthday wishes. I didn't know I had so many friends. I didn't know that many people cared about me. That's one of the values of Facebook. We can know how cared we are. So this is the last Monday of the month. So we're going to do our wonderful Women's Spaces pledge. And I got to tell you folks something. I have passed out 5,000 of those cards. So there's over 5,000 people that have those cards. And you know something? I want all those 5,000 people to get off their butt and go on Facebook and become fans of Women's Spaces. I really would appreciate it. So we're going to do the pledge. So all you do is just sit back. If you're in your home, just sit back and relax. If you're in your car, you know, just listen to my voice, you know, but just try to absorb what I'm saying. You know, too many times, because of what someone thinks of us, we stop doing things that we want to do. And it's very important that we look at our own self-esteem and the way we think about ourselves. And this is just one step, and that's why I do the pledge. I do the pledge every single day. I do it at least 5 times before I come on the air because I have to remind myself about these things constantly. Otherwise, I get kind of, you know, it's not as smooth or as natural as I would like it to be. So let's do our pledge. Here we go. Just repeat after me. My self-esteem
does not depend
on anything
outside of me.
My self-esteem
depends
on my relationship
with myself
and my higher power. I just love that. I'm just going to say the whole thing. Just listen to it. And I got to make a little comment about that higher power. My self-esteem does not depend on anything outside of me. My self-esteem depends on my relationship with myself and my higher power. Well, when I was at the women's, at the march for the Young People's March on Saturday, I gave the card to somebody and they said, oh no, this is religion. This is religion. I said, why? And she says, because of the higher power. Well, I used to say my self-esteem depends on my relationship with myself and the great who-woo or the great whatever or the great who knows. But the reason I chose higher power is because it encompasses everything. It encompasses religion. If you believe in God, if you believe in Jesus, if you believe in Buddha, whatever you believe in, it also brings in the whole power of the universe that we live in this mysterious place. So that's why I chose higher power. But if it's too religious for you, what I want you to do is we're going to say it a little bit different. My self-esteem does not depend on anything outside of me. My self-esteem depends on my relationship with myself and the great whatever. And that's as plain and as simple as we can get, and the great whatever, because I don't care who you are, none of us really know what that great whatever is. But we know it's there, and we know that Ken always says we're on the grace wave. It's like we're on the wave of spirituality, of love, of justice, and all the good things that we can be. But we have to keep thinking that we're on this wave of love and this way of good feeling. Anyway, lots to think about. But, you know, that's what Women's Spaces is all about. At least I like to think about that way. Well, we're going to take a musical break. And, wait a minute. No musical break yet, because I have a very special announcement to make. And if I forget to make this announcement, I will be in really hot water. If I can, I'm looking for my different papers. There's going to be a rally in Oakland. And, I guess I don't have it. When I come back from the break, I will find it and I will announce it. So we're going to take a musical break, and the song I will be playing is Standing on the Shoulders, sung by Earth Mama. The reason I chose that song is to remind every woman at that Women in Conversation event, and to remind all the facilitators that we are standing on the shoulders of many, many women who marched, who went to jail, who died for us to get to vote and to get some sort of equality. And to do a special shout out to our folks that developed the National Women's History Project that developed right here in Sonoma County. So let's listen to Earth Mama singing Standing on My Shoulders, and when we come back, we are going to be talking to retired police officer, Los Angeles Police Department, Cheryl Dorsey.
I am standing on the shoulders of the ones who came before me. I am stronger for their courage. I am wiser for their words. I am lifted by their longing for a fair and brighter future. I am grateful for their vision, for their toiling on this earth. They are saints and they are humans. They are angels, they are friends. We can see beyond the struggles and the troubles and the challenge. When we know that by our efforts, things will be better in the end. If they hadn't tried. came before me. I am honored by their passion for our liberty. I will stand a little taller. I will work a little longer. And my shoulders will be there to hold the ones who follow me.
Yes, I'm standing on the shoulders of many, many great women. Sojourner Truth, Harriet Tubman, Emma Goldman. I mean, I could go on and on. I mean, there's so many great women. I mean, that's why I say go to NWHP, the National Women's History Project.org, and you can find all kind of history. Well, welcome back. For those of you just joining us, you are listening to KBBF 89.1 FM, Calistoga, Santa Rosa. And I want to remind my listeners that the opinions expressed here are not necessarily the opinions of KBBF, its board of directors, its members, or Women's Spaces. Well, welcome back. You're listening to Women's Spaces, and I'm your host, Elaine B. Holtz. And before I introduce my guests, I did find that little flyer. My dear friend Susan Lamont, who's an activist here in Sonoma County, said, you better announce this, that's why I had to find it. Here we go. What's happening in Oakland on Sunday, April 15th is quite a ways away, but I will have more information as we get closer. No to U.S. wars at home and aboard. It's going to be at Lake Merritt Amphitheater at 12th Street and 4th Avenue on Lake Merritt Boulevard. That's going to be Oakland, Sunday, April 15th, 2018. It starts at 11 o'clock in the morning, and I hope you can be there. And we will be posting something on Women's Spaces also to let people know what is happening. Well, I'm really excited, and without further ado, I'd like to introduce my special phone guest. On the phone with me is Cheryl Dorsey. Welcome, Cheryl. Welcome to Women's Spaces.
Hi, Elaine. Thank you for having me.
Oh, I'm just so honored. You know, it's reading your book is just amazing. You mind if I tell my listeners just a little bit about you?
No, please.
Cheryl Dorsey is a Los Angeles native and began a career in law enforcement in 1978 with the State of California Department of Justice. Cheryl later joined the Los Angeles Police Department, where she worked in all four bureaus of operation. You know, this is really interesting because I know exactly where you were working, South Central, West, and the Valley. During her 10-year on the LAPD, she worked exclusively in patrol and specialized units such as traffic, vice, and the infamous gang unit known as the Community Resources Against Street Hoodlums, CRASH. She retired after 20 years of service, and she retired as a lieutenant. As an LAPD insider, Cheryl Dorsey has written an autobiography, The Creation of a Manifesto, Black and Blue, which the way it's described, which pulls the covers off the LAPD and provides an unfiltered look into the department's internal process, along with offering suggestions on how to improve the culture. And I'm proud to announce, it's very interesting, and I listened to the interview that Cheryl was on Travis Smiley, Dr. Phil's show, and a frequent commentator on CNN, HLN, MSNBC, and KPCC. And I'm going to add Women's Spaces. I mean, I'm so proud to have you on, Cheryl. Thank you so much for taking the time. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, I just want to thank you, though, for the promotion. I was actually a sergeant when I retired, not a lieutenant.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I don't know where I found lieutenant, but Well, congratulations, even a sergeant. I mean, I think that's pretty high. So let's start out a little bit about what motivated you? What motivated you to actually become, even become a police officer? And what's let me make a little statement to our listeners. What's motivated me to bring you on the show is to look at the culture of law enforcement and how change can happen. You know, we're electing a new sheriff here in Sonoma County in June, and I thought it would be of interest to folks to hear some ideas on what questions to ask, you know, when they're seeing the candidates out talking, and how law enforcement can become more transparent and accountable. So talk about your background and how you got involved with law enforcement. What was your motivation?
Well, my motivation was really kind of a selfish one. I just was looking for a good paying job with benefits, and LAPD kind of fit the bill. And I came on at a time where you could do 20 years and retire with a lifetime pension. And so being very young, that was really appealing to me. My mindset was to do 20 years, retire, and then have another life, not knowing what that second phase of my life would look like. But I knew that I would be young enough to do whatever I wanted to do once I left the LAPD. And so that was kind of what pushed me in that direction. I didn't grow up wanting to be a police officer. I joined out of need.
Well, you know, when you first joined the police department back in 1978, it was around the time that women were beginning to be encouraged, actually, to become police officer. As a woman and a woman of color, what were some of the challenges you faced at that time? Because I remember I was going to Sonoma State at the time, and women's studies was really, really taking off. Women's History Project was starting to move. All kinds of things were happening. What kind of challenges did you face as a woman and as a woman of color at that time?
Well, you know, I faced many challenges, and luckily for me, I really didn't have an expectation or an idea of what I was getting myself into. You know, I just knew that I needed a good paying job, and because I had quit a job to join the LAPD, I knew that not making it through the academy was not an option, and I knew that once I graduated and I was sent to my first division of assignment, that I needed to get off probation, because we were very vulnerable as police recruits and candidates. Until you got that first year and a half under your belt and got off probation, and then you're vested. So that was my mindset. I was just singularly focused on 6 months of the academy, getting through that, and then singularly focused on my 12-month probationary period so that I could go on and start experiencing all the things that were available to me in my mind as a Los Angeles Police Department officer. Well, then what I found out once I got on the LAPD is that all of the things that were available were not necessarily available to people who look like me. There were places that I couldn't work because, well, no one ever said it to me, but they figured out a way to eliminate me either in the interview process for coveted positions or some other reason. I didn't have enough time on the job was something that was generally said to me when I tried to apply for positions that would put me in direct line to promote. And so once I got on the department, I just made up my mind. I wanted to get really, really good at being a police officer in patrol, because I hear the guys in the station talking and they really didn't have a lot of respect for women. They felt like we were being forced down their throat, because at that time, LAPD was under a consent decree to hire more women and minorities. And so I wanted to kind of put that myth to bed and just get really good at learning and knowing what it was to be a patrol officer. And ultimately, I wound up spending my entire career in patrol because I had a good time.
Well, let me, you know, as you talk, it takes a lot of knowledge about yourself and a lot of belief in yourself. Where did you get the courage or the to keep the mindset going that, you know, you're going to move forward? I mean, here you had some issues where, you know, the men were a little bit uncomfortable because women were coming in and it was a new concept. You know, how did you keep yourself centered? What were some of your secrets?
Well, you know, I'm just an obstinate kind of girl. And I joke with people and I say, you know, I'm the kind of person, if you tell me no, then I must. And so, you know, as I fought and fell upon barriers and obstacles and people who just were not very nice to me that I had to work with day in and day out, the nastier they got, the more resolve I had with, you know what, I'm gonna make it through this day. I'm going to make it through this month. You know, I'm going to make it in this division, and then I'm going to move on to another assignment. And I just I just wouldn't take no for an answer.
Well, you know, I don't know if you heard, this is the last Monday of the month. I hope you were listening to the streaming when we did the pledge. Did you happen to hear that?
I was listening.
Okay, well, the pledge, and that's exactly what you're saying, is that you had within yourself enough self-esteem to kind of hold on and say, hey, you know, I'm moving forward. You know, I'm not going to take time to listen to whether you're positive or negative about me. I just got my goals, and I got my eye on the prize, so to speak. Would you agree with that?
Pretty much. And, you know, I just, I've never been a follower. I was raised, my parents instilled in me to be an individual. My mother always told me, you know, don't be like everybody else. Be your own person. And so it was very easy for me to not get caught up in the LAPD culture because, like I said, number one, I didn't grow up wanting to be a police officer. I did it out of necessity. I was a single mom at that time with a small child. I had just gone through a divorce. And so I didn't want to necessarily assimilate. I didn't want to be part of the culture. And me being a female certainly brought a different dimension because the guys, you know, they have this thing that they do. They go and they drink after work, or they go to, you know, gentlemen's clubs after work. And so I wasn't interested in any of that. So it was very easy for me to kind of stay to myself, come do my 8 hours, go home and be a mom.
Amazing. I mean, Cheryl, my hat's off to you. I mean, I as you're talking, I can just visualize that. I know for myself, you know, rising in the corporate world, you know, being a woman, I know some of the challenges that I had, and I can just multiply it about by five. Well, you know, here you put your 20 years in, and I really want to get into the book, because the book is so important. It really is. And you know, you retired. When did you retire? What year do you? Was that in
1990? I retired in 2000.
So you retired in 2000, and then was that when you wrote the book?
No, I actually didn't write the book until 2013, and what prompted me to write the book was a very tragic thing that happened down here in Southern California. It involved a black LAPD officer who had lost his job, and he wasn't happy with the way that he had been treated by command staff on LAPD. His name was Christopher Dorner. And I don't know if you know the story, but he wound up going on a killing spree. He killed the family member of an LAPD captain, and then he also shot and killed two San Bernardino, Riverside police officers who he thought were chasing him. They just happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time, and because he knew he was being hunted, he saw them, thought they were looking for him, and shot and killed them, and then he wound up holding up in San Bernardino Mountains in a cabin, and by then, authorities were on him. It took about 9 days for them to catch him, and he was ultimately killed. And so while LAPD and others were looking for this former officer, and I knew that some of the issues he had with LAPD were true, I just realized the way he handled it was inappropriate, and what he was trying to convey was going to get lost because of the tragedies of innocent people losing their lives. And so I just decided I'm going to write about what LAPD did to me, how LAPD treated me, how my partners treated me, how my supervisors acquiesced and condoned the bad treatment, how I dealt with sexism and racism and reverse racism during my 20-year career. And in all of that, I managed to hold on. I didn't kill anybody. I managed to get to the end of the rainbow, if you will. And I wanted officers who may go through that same thing that I went through, that Dorner went through, or that any person goes through on their job. We know the term going postal, right?
Right.
So you know what it is to work for a superpower who could treat you in a way that you think is inappropriate, and then you want to lash out in a way that makes no sense. And so I wanted anybody who's been there to know that there's life after that thing, whatever it is. There's life after. And I was evidence of life after. I was evidence of surviving that. And so I just wanted to talk about my experiences and help people understand what it's like to be behind that blue wall. Because before me, I believe, you've never really heard anyone speak honestly about the things that go on. And so I talk about, I air dirty laundry, but I don't do it because I have an axe to grind. I do it because I'm being authentic, and because if we don't admit there's a problem, then there's really nothing for us to fix.
Well, just piggybacking on that, you know, there's a lot of talk, you know, in police departments, when you've mentioned it several times about culture. you know, and hear that this man that went on this spree was being affected by the culture, and it sounds like he was trying to give the message that something's wrong here, and you picked it up and decided to write this book. So explain what culture is. What does that mean?
Well, you know, it's about camaraderie, and I was never in the military, but I know that when I came on LAPD, it was very quasi-military, and most police departments are structured the same way. And so, you know, these people begin to be your family. You're with a police partner, you know, 8 hours a day or longer, depending on your shift or whether or not you work overtime, and you're with that person day in and day out. And so, you know, you really rely on them, certainly, because sometimes you're in life or death situations, or you're in fights, you know, where it endears you to this person because they had your back. And then, of course, they're constantly drilling that in your head, you know, from the academy, that, you know, the importance of having your partner's back, and, you know, not only having their back literally, but physically. And so if you're not careful, you can really get caught up and you can buy into this sheeple mentality. And so if you are shown bad things by a partner, you do bad things. If you aren't strong in your constitution, when you see someone treating another human being in a way that you know is inappropriate, that you wouldn't want them to treat your family member if they stopped them, then it's very easy to get caught up in that. And sometimes officers just don't say anything because there's a price to pay, because there is no such thing as whistleblower protection. There's no place where a police officer can go and report misconduct and not be retaliated against, either by your peers or by your supervisors. And so it becomes a choice of, do I maintain so that I can protect myself, provide for my family, or do I commit career suicide by telling on a partner who did something that I know they should not have done?
Well, you know, it's really interesting as you talk about that, you know, because I can't help but go back to this election that we're having, you know. And I know every county, I mean, I'm not singling out Sonoma County, I just happen to live here, every county is having issues. I mean, there's so many shootings going on, so many different things. I mean, your head spins every time you turn on the radio or the TV and you hear. So, you know, there's two things that I'm really curious about. For when something like that happens, as a woman, how do you fit in there? You know, because one of the questions that I want to ask is, if there's a young woman out there who's thinking about going into law enforcement, you know, what should she be aware of? What questions, what classes, or what does she need to do? But also at the same time, how, as for you, you had three challenges in my mind. Number one, the first, you know, all of a sudden women being integrated into the force, which was a big step. The second thing is that you are a woman. And the third thing is that you're a woman of color. So you had all these issues that you had to work with, and at the same time feel that you belong in this culture. How did you work your way in? And what kind of advice would you give somebody out here that maybe wants to get into law enforcement to overcome some of that stuff?
Well, you know, what I say join police departments in your communities and get involved and get engaged, because whatever change it is that you want, it's going to come from the inside. It's going to come from people like me, who know that there's a way to treat people who do bad things and allow them to have their dignity as we take them to jail. And so if you want to be a part of that change, then you need to be on that police department. And so what I would say is that expect and understand that there's going to be trials and tribulations. And so if you don't go in there wide-eyed and bushy-tailed and think this is some kind of utopia, you won't get your feelings hurt when you sit next to a police officer who doesn't want to be next to you, or who doesn't think you deserve to be there, or being a female who thinks the only reason that you're still here is because you're sleeping around. And so if you know that those things are possible, when it happens, you'll recognize it and you'll go, aha, but it won't hurt your feelings, and you'll go on to do your job the way that you're supposed to do. So that's my first thing. And then the other thing is that, you know, understand, you know, everybody who wants to be the police may not be situated to be the police. And so there's no foul, there's no harm in saying that maybe this job isn't for me. I tried it, you know, I'm in the academy, or I'm 6 months out of the field, and, you know, I'm going to either get myself or my partner hurt, so maybe this isn't for me. And I think it's important and incumbent upon police chiefs and sheriffs to recognize those kinds of problems in potential officers and help them if you can. And if you can't, then help them get to another job, because a lot of what we do is, this is really common sense. And if sense were common, right, everybody would have it. You can't teach it.
Well, you know, there's another part to this, too. You know, I'm thinking, you know, we're having a lot of forums, you know, because this is the first time. It's amazing. This is the first time in 34 years that our county has actually been able to have some choices here. So what questions? I mean, what should citizens, you know, be looking for? I mean, what's the one or two questions they could ask? And also, there's a lot of talk about citizen oversight, you know, and citizen oversight boards. You know, what do you kind of think of those?
Well, I'm a big proponent of civilian review boards. We have one down here. Los Angeles Police Commission is our independent civilian review board. The only problem that I have with them is that most of them don't really have any teeth behind what it is that they do. Here, our board can make a recommendation, and that's kind of how it is across the nation. You know, these review boards see things. They take a look at shootings. They take a look at uses of force, and then they make a recommendation. The police chief has tremendous autonomy over his department, and they ultimately have the last say in terms of what will happen next. So while I'm for independent review boards, I also believe that they should have a little more power behind them.
Well, yeah, when we were talking, one of the things that we were forcing, we were trying to bring into with the oversight that we have here, was we were trying to bring in subpoena power, and that was not very well looked at. Well, what are some questions you think that then how do you know how to ask questions that what would be as a police officer yourself, and or if say if you worked in the sheriff's department, a new sheriff was coming in, what would you be curious about?
Well, you know, I would ask questions that you know, are relevant and pertinent to me. And so it's a very individual thing. But for me, you know, what I want to know is I want somebody in my community who could relate to me. I want somebody, you know, who's going to understand, be able to put themselves in my place as a community member. I want someone who is willing to be transparent, someone who's not going to always speak company speak and toe the company line. I want someone who's going to hold errant officers accountable if they violate department policy and are over aggressive with people. I want someone who's going to pay attention, because officers who do that, officers who abuse their authority, they don't generally start off killing people. They don't start off, you know, beating people badly. They start off being disrespectful during a traffic stop, or disrespectful when they come to your home to investigate some kind of domestic discord. And so when you see those red flags, I think it's important for supervisors to pay attention to the people that they manage and look for those red flags. And again, get help for the officers, train them, retrain them. And psychological evaluations are key. And I think if police departments were to have these on a regular and recurring basis, that would be important, because officers get exposed to a lot of gnarly stuff. And if you aren't careful, that too can twist you and jade you. And while you may come on one way, 3 years later, your mind may be in a different place, either because of environment or because of partners or because of things that you witnessed or were exposed to. And so if there's a psychological evaluation every couple of 2-3 years, just to make sure your head is on straight, I think that would be helpful. And so I would want to know, is this person that's going to lead my department concerned about these kinds of things that concern me?
Well, I mean, that's the bottom line right there, is the concern, you know, and recognizing. And one of the things that I think that ends up happening is, I think that when you're in a negative situations, or, you know, it's constant, you know, it feels like it's constant, you start losing hope, and you start losing your perspective that these are just human beings. You know, you think the whole world is a problem. So I really thank you for your opinion on that. And, you know, let's kind of come up to today's world. You know, we just had the March for Your Lives with these young people. You know, I think it's very, very important. And the beauty of the United States, I mean, folks, you know, everybody's screaming about the Second Amendment. To me, the most exciting thing about the United States is the First Amendment, that we have a right to free speech. We have a right to assemble. We have a right to choose our own religion. What is your thought on what's happening with these young people? I mean, how do you see that? And how do you feel as a retired police officer? How do you believe that these young people should be looked upon?
Well, I'm very excited by their enthusiasm and the momentum, and it's unfortunate that it took this latest tragedy to get the kind of response from the young people that we're seeing, but these are going to be the ones that are going to make a difference. And I don't know if this stat is true, but I heard it, read it somewhere, that there's like 4 million of them that are going to turn 18 between now and November. I mean, that's amazing to think of the kind of change that they can affect. And so while they're excited about, you know, guns and gun control and that kind of stuff, I hope that that will lead to other areas as well. And so while we're talking about, you know, being a police officer as an occupation, I would love to see, and I don't know what the outreach is on various departments in terms of really trying to recruit minorities and or women, but I think, you know, of course I'm biased, girls rock. I would love to see more women on these police departments, because we understand in a way that men don't. You know, we're nurturing by nature, and we know that when, you know, I stop a male suspect who might be agitated with me, I already know I can't beat him up. I already know that. So that means I got to have some other tools to use to command this guy, to compel him, to get him to go along. And I'm proud to say in my 20 years on LAPD, I've been in some fights, but I've never had to shoot anybody, because I was able to not internalize, not take something personal, not look at it as an affront to me when somebody was angry and didn't want to go to jail. That's what bad guys do. They want to get away. But it's something about men that, you know, when one guy takes on another guy, it's like two rams butting heads. And, you know, each one wants to outdo the other. But as women, you don't see those kinds of uses of forces. And so I would just love to see a world where there was, you know, maybe 60, 40 female police chief sheriffs running stuff.
Well, you know, one of the things, whenever the question comes up, is why don't we have more women on the police force? There's always this issue, it's hard to recruit them. Do you have any idea? Where do you go and get these women? What would you suggest?
Well, listen, it's hard to recruit them if you're not trying. It's hard to recruit them if you don't make it look appealing and sexy, right? If you don't make it seem like it's something that, you know, they can do, then sure, it's hard to recruit them. And then once you recruit them, if you don't treat them in a way that is conducive to getting them through the system, then you're going to have an attrition rate where, yeah, we hired X amount in the academy and only two made it out. Or we get them out of the academy and then we figure out a way to get rid of them through the probationary period. Or those few that make it through probation and get off and now they're vested, well, what kind of mentoring system do you have in place? If you just got a bunch of good old boys, are they going to mentor these young police females to try to get them up through the ranks where they are reachable and attainable for higher positions? So I think in the places where it doesn't happen, where they say it can't happen, it's because they don't want it to happen.
Well, you know, Cheryl, in listening to you, I can't invite you for the police department, but if there's any officers out there listening, I think they should have you come in and just do a little presentation of understanding. I mean, it's like this, you know, we have to understand each other. It's that simple. Well, listen, we're coming to the end of our segment. I mean, time goes by so fast, and I can't thank you enough. I mean, I can't believe I'm being added to this wonderful list of interviews that you've had. Is there any last thought you have, any websites that people can send their find out more about you, or how they can get the book, or anything last minute things that you would like to share?
Yeah, I have a website and it's amazing, so I hope everyone will stop by and take a look at it. And my website is www.sgt, which is the abbreviation for sergeant, sgtcherildorsey.com. And my book, The Creation of a Manifesto, Black and Blue, is available on Amazon. And very shortly, I'm coming out with a new version of my book, which will be called Black and Blue, The Creation of a Social Advocate. So the best way to keep track of me and know where I am and what I'm doing would just be to Google Cheryl Dorsey LAPD, and I'm on all sorts of social media. Thank you so much, Elaine, for having me on and letting me share a little bit about me and my life with your listeners.
You were just wonderful, Cheryl, from the bottom of my heart. Thank you so much. Well, folks, that's it for our show. A special thank you to Cheryl Dorsey, who wrote the wonderful book, The Creation of Manifesto, Black and Blue. She's a retired Los Angeles Police Department sergeant, and it was just an absolute pleasure to be interviewing her. I want to remind my listeners that the children are our future. We must never lose sight of that. A reminder, tell your friends, Women's Spaces will be aired again on 11 p.m. this evening. This is Elaine B. Holtz, and you've been listening to Women's Spaces. Thank you so much for listening, and I look forward to being with you the next time.
The woman in your life.